Of what might happen to you as a result of making these revelations?
Oh, yes. I probably am a dead man already.
They think they're living in a police state.
Once upon a time, there were these people in Europe called pilgrims, and they were afraid of being persecuted. So they all got in a boat and sailed to the New World where they wouldn't have to be scared ever again.
I loves my gun. And I don't mean no money, like I work at Walmart and make no money.
So enjoy yourself, or I'll come looking for you. There and veg out in front of your TV and enjoy what these fine people are giving you, which is maximum entertainment. You understand what I'm saying about? And don't you ever, ever, ever forget what it's like without TV. Because before TV, people just sat and played with themselves all night.
I loves my gun.
Recorded 29th November, less than 1 month at the end of the year. Yeah, right, my butt. This is your host, Iron Angel, with another episode of Rangers A to Z. Thank you for coming in, listening. Thanks for your time. Hope you have a good time. Hopefully you'll learn something out of this one. If all goes right, I won't swear a whole lot. You can share it with Grandma and all that kind of stuff. Because this one's kind of a gift guide in a way. You know, the holidays coming up and all that kind of stuff. It's Bleeding Edge. And Bleeding Edge a lot of times means tech. In this case, it doesn't. Bleeding Edge in this case means knives, because I really think, you know, a lot of people get into going camping, going out, being in the wild, that kind of stuff, and they end up spending way too much on a knife that they end up losing almost immediately. You know, they'll lose it in their tackle box, they'll lose it in the back of their car, they'll lose it in the woods, something like that, and it just doesn't make sense. You know, I mean, you got a sharp piece of steel. Now, yeah, there are some features that are really handy to have and so on and so forth. We're going to go over all that kind of stuff. But this episode is primarily about knives. And I might even have music that fits in that. I'm not sure. I'll have to dig around and see what I got. So at any rate, a knife. One of mankind's older tools. The first multi-tool ever was the stick. Because even a naked guy can get a stick pretty easily in most places. And once you got a stick, then you find a hunk of vine and a rock, and you upgrade the stick to the rock on a stick, also known as a hammer. Pretty soon you find something sharp. Either rub the stick on a rock and make a spear, or you find a nice sharp chunk of rock, and you stick that in the stick, and now you have a spear. Well, at some point along the way, you had that hunk of rock that was sharp, and you made that into a knife, probably way before you actually made the spear, but the spear makes it's a knife on a stick, is all it really is. Basically, the knife is nothing more than a force multiplier. How they work is really simple. Your hand applies a certain amount of force to an object. Now, if you put your finger on that object, say, let's say a piece of rope. Your finger's not going to do a very good job of cutting that piece of rope. But if your finger came down to a much thinner edge, like your fingernail does, you have a better chance of cutting that rope. The problem is your fingernail's not hard enough. All a knife is a way to take the force from your hand and put it into a very small area. If you press straight down with a knife, a lot of times it won't actually cut through something. It's the drawing motion that actually cuts through the piece. And how that happens is the edge, the very microscopic edge of the knife is not smooth. It's a very fine serration. Sometimes you'll see, I'm a blacksmith, I custom make Damascus knives for people. Part of the appeal of Damascus knives is a lot of mystery and BS about their history. All they are is laminations of multiple kinds of steel. In some cases, they're not even steel. You'll also see versions of quote-unquote Damascus in non-ferrous metals, copper, silver, or you'll see a mix, rarely, of steel and bronze or something like that. When mankind started doing knives and bronze and moved over to iron, probably there was a transitional phase where the iron wasn't very well made because they didn't know what they were doing yet or didn't have real good quality materials yet. And so you flowed bronze into that material and used that to make up the remainder of the blade. I've done a few of these, and they're really kind of cool looking. And as you work with them, the bronze being softer wears away, leaving the harder steel, so you get this sort of serrated edge. And if you don't know what a serration is, it's kind of an edge with teeth. Think steak knife. If you've looked at the edge of a steak knife, that's a serration. And there's a number of different ways to make that serration. A number of different patterns, that kind of stuff. Typically, the serration is cut from one side of the blade so that there's a flat side and a toothed side. So it'll saw down through easier, leaving a clean edge on one side of the cut. Now, as that serration gets smaller, you get a finer cut. So Damascus laminate steels, that kind of stuff, or even ceramics to some extent, have a very fine serration along the edge. And that makes them seem like more aggressive cutters. In reality, they're just as aggressive as anything else. It's just you're dealing with a micro-serrated edge. If you did that with another hard tool steel, you get the exact same effect. Now, quite often, if you go to a yard sale or a flea market, something like that, and pick up an old knife, you'll see that it's kind of a dark color. It's not quite black. And what that is an oxidation on the surface of the steel. And that oxide layer is actually a beneficial thing. It's helping to prevent the steel from rusting. Rust is another form of oxide. There's a number of different ways that the carbon in steel will oxidize. I can't talk today. But at any rate, we're not going to get into that. We're just going to cover a few of the other stuff. Don't worry about it. If you happen to find a wonderful old, well-made steel kitchen knife, it's kind of dark and black and that kind of stuff, take it home, dip it in white vinegar, which is acetic acid, and that'll help clean it off quite a bit more, and then buff the living crap out of it with a Scotch-Brite pad or something like that. Then go through and sharpen that edge up, and probably coat it in something like olive oil, some other canola oil, something like that, something that's food safe that you can safely use. You just have to watch the oil not getting rancid. I actually have a buddy who has a really exceptional, really top quality chef's knife that he keeps in his freezer. He has a knife block in his freezer, and it keeps the oil from going rancid on the blade. And I have to say, it is a really nice knife, and I understand why he treats it the way he does. And it has a special handle that can deal with that. A lot of times, the handles are wood and don't deal with being frozen well. If they get wet, the water will expand on the wood and crack the wood, or if there's any moisture still in the wood, that kind of stuff. It's a special handle, and so on and so forth. It's a silicone-covered micarta. Synthetic handle. But most of the knives you're going to run into these days are some kind of stainless steel. And I really, you know, okay, let's back up a little bit. I'm going to jump all over the place in this one because why not? We can. I'm going to get up on a big old rant right here. It's soapbox time, okay? A buddy of mine used to teach, grew up in Japan, learned martial arts the exciting way. That is, he got the snot kicked out of him on the street. He was the kid of a businessman living in Japan, out in the middle of Tokyo, and, you know, couldn't keep his mouth shut. He was kind of a wise ass, and learned martial arts from the receiving end, eventually got pretty dang good at getting his ass kicked, and hit 18, his dad came back to America, he came back to America, and he figured, well, crap, you know, I know all this stuff. You know, not dojo magic martial arts, you know, practical, how to get your ass handed to you really well kind of martial arts. And, you know, it's kind of a mixing of kickboxing and street fighting and some Eskrima thrown in, stick fighting, and, you know, all this other stuff mixed together. And so he was very, very handy with beating people up for money. And so he figured, well, I should go teach in a martial arts school. But, you know, it turns out that in the Americas, they don't really like it a whole lot when you beat up the students. And so when, you know, the kids go home all beat up and stuff, you don't have kids coming back more than once or twice. So he decided to go on to be a bodyguard, which was a pretty, you know, pretty suitable job for him. And he eventually got a job as a quote-unquote translator and prison riot breaker. And, you know, so this is a pretty rough fellow. And he teaches self-defense courses for women, which, you know, he's mellowed out a great deal in his older ages, but, you know, he still knows and still has that mentality. Anytime he teaches a self-defense course, the typical female self-defense courses don't have knives in them. but he generally wants them to bring a knife with, especially if there's males in the class, because the males will bring big tactical knives. And he says, all right, you brought fighting knives. Yeah, it's a really good fighting knife. Really good fighting knife. All right, well, let's try a little experiment then. Everybody in the class choose the two best fighting knives they see, and the votes will almost always come down to something like a Tanto versus something like, say, a K-bar style blade. Alright, we're going to take these two knives and find out which one's the best fighting knife. He takes both knives, stands them up on the table on their points, yells, fight, and lets go of them. Both knives fall over. He says, okay, these don't seem like very good fighting knives. Well, you gotta hold it. Well, at that point, the knife is simply an extension of your hand. It's a tool. It is a force multiplier extending from your hand. He says, now the problem is, if you get on a bus, if you're in a public place, if you're at work, you can't carry this big knife. Because a lot of places frown on that. Some jobs you can. You know, if you're a park ranger, for example, or, you know, a number of other things, there's a lot of places you can carry a knife. Decent size fixed blade. He says, but you know what? The absolute best knife in the world at home is absolutely useless. The best knife there is in the world is the one you have on you all the time, which almost always comes down to being a fairly small pocket knife, usually 3.5 inch or less blade. Because really, when's the last time you were in a knife fight? Okay, there might be a few of you out there, they're bouncers or police or something like that, that yes, you have been in one. But, you know, when's the last time that there was some sort of big throwdown like you see in, that play that I can't ever remember. You know, the Jets versus the what are they doing in Central America? Trouble is brewing in Central... Yeah, that one. They're just... It doesn't happen. It's not like Michael Jackson's Beat It video where there's you know, 30 guys standing around... Two guys trying a knife fight, tie it with their wrist tied together. You know, this just doesn't happen anymore. This isn't common. However, there's a whole lot of situations where you do need a knife. You got a package, and some moron at the other end got free tape and completely sealed this thing in tape. You need a way into that. Yeah, you could probably go after it with a needle or nail clippers or something like that, let yourself into it. But let's face it, a pocket knife, take out a little pocket knife, pop it open, cut the tape. Life is good. You didn't screw up what was in it. You didn't stab it to death with a screwdriver and, you know, probably break the brand new iPad you got, whatever. So, you know, the knife is primarily a tool. Too many people see a knife as a weapon, and it is not a weapon. The knife is a tool that has the ability to be a weapon. Almost any tool can be a weapon. The knife just happens to be better at it than most things. You know, quite frankly, trying to hit somebody with a drill press, a little tricky. Pretty dang effective if you can do it, but on the whole, a little tricky. Kind of hard to conceal, too. And, you know, the drill press does its job very well. It's a tool, like anything else. It's a force multiplier. But it doesn't do a lot of things. The knife is very versatile. You can do all kinds of stuff with it. Sharpening pencils, trim your nails. Not a good idea. Scrape a sticker off something, open a package, cut string, cut rope, whittle with it. You can do creative things with it. You can certainly cut food up with it for preparation. You get a sandwich and they forgot to cut it for you. Well, strange enough, they would have cut it with a knife, but, you know, they weren't allowed to have them because, oh, knives are dangerous or some stupid crap like that. And so, you know, you have a lot of uses for a knife. Why aren't you carrying one? Well, you know, a lot of people do, but a lot more people don't. And a lot of the reason they don't is because of that stigma. Oh, it's a weapon. Well, okay. No, it's not. Sure, it can be used as one, like I said, but so can anything else. I can jam a pencil into somebody's ear and really let them have a bad day. So, if you do happen to get stopped with a knife on you, there's a bunch of places you know you shouldn't have them. Going through airport security, you really shouldn't have them because they get real jumpy about that. But if you get stopped on the street, if you get stopped at a traffic stop or something like that, and the officer asks you to take it out, even if it's got a thumb stud or a thumb hole or something like that, you know, make a big show out of opening it with two hands. You know, show him that you're not, you know, you don't have mad ninja skills with opening the knife and this kind of crap. because, one, it makes him a lot more comfortable. If he asks you to open it, and it's rare they will, if he does ask you to open it, you know, open it with two hands, do it slowly, do it easily, do it away from him. It makes him easier. Your day's going to go a lot better. His day's going to go a lot better. He doesn't think you're some kind of, you know, psychopath that's trying to, you know, go out and stab people in the subway or something. All that said, back to the practicality of it. I really think that in holiday gift giving, simple, inexpensive, durable knives are a fantastic gift, even for somebody who's got a few knives. And they're an even better gift for somebody who wants to get into things like wild camping or hunting or fishing or anything like that. Heck, even somebody who's into crafting and such, having a decent, sharp knife is really worth quite a lot of money, you know? Sharp is a really important thing, and we're going to come back to that a whole bunch of times. Once you have a knife, keep it sharp, because a sharp knife cuts through things easier. You don't have to use anywhere near as much force. And if it does slip, you don't end up driving it into your leg. Or you're prying on something and the board that you're cutting on breaks and you end up driving the knife into, you know, grandma's good tabletop or the roof of your car or any number of other things. The sharper the knife is, the better. And this brings us back around to stainless steel. A lot of modern knives are stainless steel. There are ways to make stainless steel cut nearly as well as a good high-carbon tool steel knife will. However, in cheap knives, this is rare. The problem is, the chromium molecule in the steel, if we looked at it under a microscope, the steel molecules would be about the size of, say, marbles. The chromium molecule is about the size of a basketball mixed in all these marbles. It's not exactly that ratio, but the ratio is substantially different. So, at the edge of the blade, where the actual cutting surface is, the finest you can possibly get that edge is one molecule thick. In reality, it's a great deal more than one thick, because there needs to be some support there. There needs to be enough molecules leaning on each other to support each other, so they're not torn away in the cut by some other rough abrasive, you know, cut a piece of sand and a piece of rope or something like that. So you've got a few molecules thick. So if you're looking at it under a microscope, if you've got, say, three or four basketball size molecules wide versus, say, 8 or 10 sand size molecules wide or marble size molecules wide or even 3 baseball size molecules wide, you still have a much finer edge. Now, the reason that chrome is there is to make the steel stain less. Remember that black blade I was talking about earlier? That stain, that oxide, that form of rust, that blued form of rust, and bluing is a form of rust. It's just an oxidation that's controlled. Is kind of a negative. You know, it is going to eventually wear away the steel. As the steel oxidizes away, the iron oxide will come off it as rust, making the steel thinner and often pitted, which holds disease and bacteria and grime and junk and everything else in it, you know, so it makes it worse. Kind of like the rust in your car, you know, when the rust starts, the sooner you get rid of it, the less area it takes out. But the chrome prevents that, or to some extent does. It stains less. It isn't stain-proof, it's stain-resistant. And that stain being rust, being coloration from, say, acidic foods like cut tomatoes or something like that. So stainless is a compromise. If you freeze stainless, and don't do this at home, really, don't do this at home. If you freeze stainless in cryogenic temperatures, say 75 degrees below zero, that chromium molecule will often crack along those edges, so they get smaller, so you can shave it down thinner. It does some other things to the steel structurally. The actual process of manufacturing has a lot to do with the characteristics of how the blade behaves. All steels are hardened, or well, usually. Most steels are hardened, and then the temper is drawn back. And by drawing the temper back, what it means is to remove some of that hardness so it's no longer brittle. You see, if you have a steel that's just hard but not drawn back, it's very brittle. It's easy to fracture. It's very hard. It holds a very fine edge, and it cuts really aggressively. But at the same time, if you drop it on its side and it takes a side strike, it's very easy to fracture that steel or knock a chip out of the edge, that kind of stuff. So knives are a compromise. All cutting surfaces are some kind of compromise. You either have incredible hardness but brittle, or some toughness and flexibility and not as much hardness. And that's a lot of what that game is. In some really good steels, in some really good knives, you'll get differential tempers where the edge is harder than the rest of the blade, and the rest of that softer blade supports it so it doesn't break as easily. This is why they cost more, is because that process is more difficult, takes more time, takes more resources, and so on and so forth. Also takes a higher quality base steel. You can differential temper lower quality steels, but you don't get as much of a return from it. So, what you're basically buying is a very narrow, triangular-shaped cross-section piece of steel that has been hardened and drawn back. By drawn back, I mean added some heat, pull temper, that kind of thing. So it has some flexibility, it has some edge-holding capability. And there are some special steels out there that are not very common that are very, very highly wear-resistant. And no, you probably don't want to pay me to make you one of these. I've made a few of them. I've made some wood carving tools, some very nice wood carving knives out of a steel called Vasco Ware or Crew Ware. These two steels have about 1% tungsten in them. They're very, very wear-resistant steels. So once you get it to that shape, to that sharpened edge shape, they don't easily wear away. They don't get dull very quickly. So you have a very, very hard steel that still has a great deal of flexibility in it and holds that edge very well. The problem is it's very, very difficult to work. Because they resist abrasion, they're extremely hard to grind and polish. Takes about 10 times longer to grind and polish one of those than it does with a regular steel. That's why you don't see them commercially manufactured very much. The stuff is just a nightmare to work with. Under a hammer, it's not too bad. Standalone, where you're trying to grind it, you know, stock removal style, like most commercial blades are manufactured, it's just a nightmare. It costs 10 times as much to make them, and therefore they cost 10 times as much to buy. Now, if you could buy a $10 pocket knife versus a $1,000 pocket knife that was made out of Vasco ware and had nice fittings and silver and maybe some gemstones on it, that kind of stuff, sure, the $1,000 would be really nice to have, but it would also suck to lose. So these are some things to take into consideration. Very rarely are you going to see carbon steel blades in a folding knife commercially available unless you spend some substantial amounts of money. So you're going to be getting probably something stainless. And, you know, remember, it does stain less. You do have to clean it sometimes. You do have to sharpen it. It is harder to sharpen because of the nature of stainless. And we'll come around to that after the break, too, on sharpening and stuff like that. But, you know, I still say a stainless pocket knife that you have on your person all the time is a better choice than not having a knife at all. Even if you go to the big box store, sometimes you go to the big box stores, you can get them for a dollar. At the point you get them for a dollar, get three, get five, put one in the car, you know, that way you've got it. If you lose it, you're out a buck. It was a tool, and if you've got, you know, an hour's use out of it, you more than made your money back off it. And at that point, you know, I mean, if you got an hour of good use out of it and it starts to dull somewhat, okay, yeah, it's a wasteful thing. It's a throwaway society. They're usually serrated. It can be sharpened. You probably have the ability to bring it back to being usable again. And it's also possible that even if it can't be sharpened, it can be converted into something else. You could, you know, give it to a woodworker friend who can take that blade apart and make it into a scraper. So there's a whole bunch of different uses and things like that for what would have otherwise been discarded pieces. Now, as you spend more money, sometimes you get more for it. Usually it's a fancier, prettier thing. Not always, though. There are cases where you get up into the $30, $40 folding knives. Sometimes you're getting some more features, a better grade of steel. Most of the stainless steel blades are 440C cutlery grade stainless steel. That's what the C stands for. Or 420C cutlery grade. It's not the best steel, but it works. It makes a pretty good table knife, that kind of thing. sometimes as you go up a few dollars in price, you'll get into some better steals. You'll get into even some really weird steals. I have seen one commercially available 52-100 blade. 52-100, the different numbers mean different things. In the case of 52-100, 52 is the alloy, and 100 is the points, or hundredths of a percentage, of carbon. It's 1% carbon, and this is the steel that they make ball bearings out of. Very hard, very tough, pretty darn wear-resistant, and pretty darn stain-resistant. Not a lot of fun to sharpen, but you know what? You don't have to sharpen it very often, do you? So, you know, as you go up in price, sometimes you can get a substantially better piece. Now, in a camping or hunting kind of blade, I really like the K-Bar. I think they're about $70 new, something like that. And there's a number of different knockoffs out there. There's a number of companies out there, Cold Steel, you know, Benchmade, Gerber, a whole bunch of companies that make other equivalent large working knives. They're really functional and pretty nice knives. Spyderco makes some really nice little knives, and there's a lot of knockoffs of them and stuff like that. Most of these have either a leather or a synthetic handle on them. Some have a wood, sometimes a synthetic. It's a composite wood. It's kind of like plywood built up out of layers of birch that's been dyed interesting colors and stuff. But whatever the handle material, make sure it's something comfortable. I really like the rubberized, you know, there's a bunch of different, you know, neoprene-like feeling handles on a bigger knife because it's less apt to slip. It feels warm in your hand when it's cold. And often when you're hunting or fishing and stuff, your hands get cold. So it's a safer grip. A little less shock there and stuff. So if you do have to chop through a limb or something, like there's a tree down in the middle of the road and you have to chop a limb off or something to drive over it, that kind of thing, less shock in your hand. Just all around more comfortable, handier, you know. But in a small folder, you have a lot of options. I like for a small men's dress folder, for a work folder, to have the actual scales made out of stainless also, because it's very clean looking. It's not particularly weapon looking. It's not particularly tactical looking, you know what I'm saying? It looks like a gentleman's tool, which is exactly what it is. And so, you know, go out and look around, see what you find. Sometimes you find them with plastic handles, that kind of stuff. And like I said, you can spend anywhere from a dollar up. And if you're in the UK, that's a pound, you know, half a pound up. Poundland, I guess, from what one of the other rangers was saying, had a pretty good selection when he was there. So dig around your local area, see what you can find. Yard sales, flea markets, that kind of stuff. See what you can find. Sometimes you find some really neat stuff at yard sales. One thing to watch in yard sale knives, and all other knives really too, is you probably do want a knife blade that locks open, that has some sort of mechanical locking mechanism. In the cheaper knives, quite often it does not lock. If it doesn't lock, the big thing to be aware of is the blade can fold on your hand under certain weird circumstances. If you're using it for something you probably shouldn't be using it for, like a pry bar. I just like a locking knife better anyway because that additional mechanical lock helps keep the knife blade where it's supposed to be, more in control. So just, you know, something to consider, something to play with. If you don't know knives very well, talk to a friend who does. Let them show you a locking knife and how the lock works. There's a number of different liner locks, spine locks, ball locks, things like that. Number of different locking methods. And I'm not talking about a switchblade here. This is a hand-open knife. Quite often there's a little thumb hole or a stud. You hold it between your fingers and you put your thumb sort of across it. Put your thumb tip on it, on that stud or hole, and it will swing the blade open. You can open it one-handed after you get used to it. It takes a little bit getting used to. That's a useful feature to have. A buddy of mine's an electrician, and anytime he's got to cut something with his knife, usually insulation or tape or something like that, he's almost always got another hand somewhere up in the air, holding onto a pipe, holding onto a safety cable, something like that. And so he needs a one-handed knife. I know in some areas, if you have a job like that, you're allowed to have a mechanically open knife, a spring knife, a switchblade, or a gravity knife, something like that. I don't like them that much because a cheap switchblade is kind of junk. They tend not to be good blades. They tend not to be well-made. They tend not to be good cutters. They tend not to be anything other than something you stick in another gang member in a 1950s movie. There are some very nice, very high-end mechanical switchblades out there, but they are not inexpensive. So, you know, just a couple different things to think about. We're going to go to a music track. I don't know what it's going to be yet. I'm going to dig around and see what I can come up with, because I'm kind of hoping to stick with the Knife theme, but, you know, I don't know if that's... It's not going to be Mac the Knife, I'll tell you that, but I'll come up with something. We'll throw it in there. Then I'll come back, and we'll talk about sharpening and carrying and so on and so forth. And till then, have fun. Hope you enjoy it. Talk to you soon.
Last days, the sign says. But nobody says how long those last days will last. Great excuse for not thinking about the future. Even better for forgetting the past. History's calling, but nobody answers. There's nobody home, so why turn on the lights? They'd rather quote scripture or old Nostradamus. You know, fill in the blanks to make it sound right. Why plan your life if there's no tomorrow? Just spend your time finding new stuff to buy. Well, some of us are out looking for answers, while other folks just sit there wondering why.
So damn wrong with helping the helpless. What's so damn wrong with doing what's right? If this was wrong, man, you said it was burning, they'd hand you a gas can and say, we like it bright. So much time spent on destruction, so little time spent helping a friend. So damn busy, spot.
And that's another cultural landslide with Looking for Answers off their brand spanking new album, Last Days, Last Days. You can find that on lonetone.com. And I will warn you right now, the outro music I have is some fast, heavy, aggressive industrial, which I don't think you can find anywhere online right now. I happened to run into this guy when I lived in Texas back in 95, and he gave me some tracks and permission and stuff like that back in the day, and I didn't have anything to use it for, and I just found it and decided, you know what, this needs to be on here. be kind of out of sorts for some of the stations that I'm carried on, Osprey and stuff like that, but Rant fits right in there because, you know, you got Rant Radio Industrials, so I want to thank both of them for having me. Any other stations I'm forgetting that's carrying me, I want to thank you guys too. I want to thank you guys who are out there listening. If you get a chance, jump on the web and go to r4nger5.com. That's rangers.com. You can find all of our stuff up there. All of it's free. Feel free to share it. Feel free to download it. Give it to the landlord, whatever. Most of the stuff is not work safe due to language, but I try and keep this show pretty clean. You can also find the Facebook page for this show at facebook.com/rangers.a2z r4nger5.a, the number 2, the letter Z. So at any rate, back on Knives. It's one of those, I'm trying so hard not to do puns, so hard, because they're just cutting, they're sharp, they're to the hilt, they're so abrasive when you get into knife maker puns, they just grind on you and it's terrible, so I'm trying really hard not to do it. At any rate, when you've got a knife, you know, you need a way to carry it. A lot of knives have a little belt clip on them or something like that. Not a bad way to do it. You know, don't put it in your boot. You know, our boot knife, no, because half the time it rubs on your ankle, screws your leg up, you drop it, you lose it, it gets cruddy, there's, you know, it gets sweat in it, rust, all this kind of stuff. Don't do that. Pocket clip's not a bad way. Dropping it in the bottom of a pocket isn't a bad way. However, I really strongly suggest getting some sort of a nice little leather or nylon belt case for it. If you don't mind carrying stuff in your belt, having a belt case, a belt line kit for, like, your knife, your phone, a flashlight, a lighter, having a lighter and a small LED battery-powered flashlight together in a case is a really good idea because they're really handy for a lot of stupid stuff. Invariably, if I drop something, it goes someplace dark. So having a flashlight is just one of those things. It's like, yeah, I gotta have that. So, yeah. that said, you know, once you've got your little knife, got a couple of them, heck, they're cheap, have two or three. You know, maybe you got a little bit bigger one in the car for camping, for hunting, that kind of stuff. Maybe you've got a nice little bitty tiny one, you know, inch long blade, inch and a half long blade, which will do 90% of the tasks you're ever going to want it to do. And that you can carry just about everywhere. I've actually seen some that are mounted as a necklace. Granted, getting on an airplane with it, you're still in trouble. That's still naughty. So, you know, don't do that. There's certain places you can't go with knives, schools, prisons, you know, things like that. You know, use some common sense there. Check your local laws. A lot of the local knife laws are kind of goofy. The knife laws, a lot of them came into place back in the day when they were trying to be tough on crime. And, you know, well, knives were evil and they stabbed people, so we gotta be tough on crime and you can't have knives. And, well, they were just stupid. They weren't well thought out. There are knife-free zones that include kitchens. And so technically you can't have a butter knife because it's still a knife, even if it isn't sharp. It's a knife-shaped object. You can't have anything, basically, that's a piece of cutlery in some of these spots. And one of them that really struck me as incredibly funny was a culinary school had a no weapons, no knives policy, and yet expected their students to bring in their own cutlery to learn with and so on and so forth. And so it was just kind of a kind of experience, you know, where you just kind of look at it and go, okay, that wasn't well thought out, was it? So, you know, they carry them in cases and stuff. I mean, it's not like you're running around wielding these things, running through the hallways, screaming like a maniac with a butcher knife, you know? Treat it with respect. It is a tool. It is a tool that can hurt you, like any tool that can hurt you. you know, a knife is made to cut things that are made out of harder material than you are. Same with, you know, a lot of other stuff, chisels and saws and screwdrivers and hammers and all that stuff, are all intended to work on things that are made out of far tougher stuff than people are made out of. So, you know, be careful, for cripe's sake. I'm not there to hold your hand and guide your way. So, you know, turn your brain on and use that. That's the biggest safety device you own. And the most useful, too. So, you know, hopefully this show is helping. Hopefully you're getting a couple laughs out of it. Hopefully you're learning something. You're getting some ideas. If you don't currently carry a knife, I hope after listening to this, you actually make a choice to do so. Not because there's ever going to be a day that you're going to whip it out and stop some thief from robbing a little old lady's purse. No, because you're going to find out it's an incredibly useful tool, and the more people that have them and use them, one, the less chance you have of being in a situation where you don't have one. And there are a few life-saving situations where they are absolutely the best tool for the job. I used to work on the fire department. My mom was an EMT in the fire department. My dad was fire chief, this kind of stuff. And there were cases where there were car wrecks. A car rolled over, came up on a tree, was upside down and sideways, sort of tilted. Gasoline was draining out of the tank because the car being upside down. The tank didn't have a gas cap; it had a rag stuck in it, so gas is pouring out of it. The engine on the car is hot. The exhaust in the car is hot. So it's a matter of, well, you know, is this guy injured? I mean, we obviously have to get him out of this vehicle. And, of course, the friggin' seatbelt jammed. And so, you know, a lot of EMS crews and ambulance crews have what they call a seatbelt cutter, which is a plastic frame that has a straight razor blade or a utility knife blade in it, still a knife, that basically just hooks over the seatbelt and pulls through it. But back at this time, those weren't around much yet. And sure enough, somebody pulled out their, you know, on the department pulled out their trusty pocket knife. You know, we checked to make sure this guy's neck was okay, this kind of stuff. He was completely uninjured, except for he was trapped in a vehicle that was about to catch fire and did catch fire. We pretty much knew it was a given. It was going to happen. And the guys that got there were the first responders. They were there in their pickup trucks. The biggest thing they had with them was a standard little, you know, number 10 BC or ABC, can't remember which one it was, fire extinguisher, which is, you know, we were spraying the exhaust with it, trying to cool the exhaust down, hoping to prevent the fire from happening, but it just, you know, wasn't enough, and kind of a preemptive strike, so we had to get this guy out of his car, and so, you know, cut the seatbelt and helped him down out of the car, and we got, we weren't away from it more than 15, 20 seconds, and it lit. Cars don't explode, but, you know, being trapped in a vehicle that's on fire is really not a good situation to be in. I've seen a bunch of cases boating where a knife saved lives. A friend of mine has a sailboat and was telling me a story about he and a buddy were out together and got caught by a storm. They hadn't checked the weather because, you know, that's always a good idea when you're going boating. Got caught by a storm. And in the storm, as the little sailboat, maybe a 28-foot, you know, sailboat, not a big boat at all in the Great Lakes, and they got hit by a wave, and they were trying to throw the anchor. As the anchor went over, the rope coiled around his buddy's leg, and the anchor was pretty substantial and yanked him over the side and caught something. Wherever they were apparently wasn't real deep, or there was something under the water there or something like that. I don't know the specifics on what happened. But the anchor caught and tried to drag his buddy through the anchor hole on the side of the boat, you know, and the rope is constricting down tighter and tighter on his leg, so they ended up having to cut the anchor rope, which probably saved his buddy's leg and possibly his life. Because because you've got all the weight of the boat pulling against that rope, you know, that could really tear him up pretty badly. And so there are a lot of cases where having a knife is really a big safety thing. I will give you that the normal sharpening, the little V-cutter sharpener things where you drag the knife blade through it, I don't think they do a very good job. There might be some out there that do a fairly good job, but the way to do it is really with a whetstone, and it's specifically for this purpose. Jump on YouTube, jump online, learn how to use one. A whetstone and an oil is an absolutely magical thing to have, and those really crappy, you know, not real good quality stainless blades we were talking about before, if they get dull, you sharpen them on the flat side. You only sharpen the flat side on a serrated blade, and it will take away material, leaving a nice sharp edge again. There's a number of different sharpening systems out there that clamp onto the back edge of the blade and have a stone on a stick kind of deal. They work really well. I've got a Lansky. I use it a lot. I really like it. I think it's a really nice tool. There's a number of different versions, including some that have diamond stones for sharpening the really hard steels. Any of those kind of methods is a really good way of doing it. When you're done sharpening a leather strop, even the back of a belt, you drag the knife backwards, you know, not edge in, edge away, back and forth over the belt 5 or 6 times, because quite often when you sharpen it, there will be a little thin wire edge of metal. And that little thin wire edge of metal is called a burr. And it seems really sharp because it's a really jagged little thin hunk of metal. But, one, it'll break off. And if you happen to use the knife, as the next thing you're using the knife for is scraping across, say, a splinter, you could very well jam that hunk of steel in your hand and make things worse. If you're cutting an apple or something like that with it, you could leave it in something you're going to eat. Not such a good thing. Having a really jagged, twisty, curly piece of metal, you know, wandering through your body is not something I really want to do. So, you know, strop off that burr. That's what it's called, a strop, by the way. And other than that, you know, just take good care of it. Keep it with you, you know. Now, this is where it starts to get interesting. Once you start carrying a knife, you'll find a lot of uses for it. Don't take it out and wave it around, obviously. You know, don't be a jerk with stuff like this. Once you start carrying them, try and get friends to. And at first, they'll be like, what are you, some kind of weird cult member or something? You know, you'll get some resistance. Explain to people it's a useful tool, and that, you know, particularly your loved ones. Mom, I'm concerned about you. I think it would just be useful to have. I don't expect you to ever knife fight an attacker. I don't expect you to ever do anything like that. But, you know, on the offhand chance you ever have to cut a seatbelt or something like that, I'd really like you to have a knife in your purse, clipped to the pocket so you can get to it easily. Ready access to them. Yes, it makes law enforcement uncomfortable. Therefore, I also strongly recommend that when the officer asks you on a traffic stop if you have any weapons in the car, tell them, I have a pocket knife. Because usually they're like, yeah, and? So, no big deal. You know, I could tell them I'm carrying a couple things you might consider weapon. I've got a pocket knife. I've got a multi-tool on my belt. I typically carry a multi-tool. The reason I carry a multi-tool and a knife is because quite often the knife blade in a multi-tool is, one, hard to sharpen, two, not the best quality. I tend to use a cheap multi-tool. I go to, you know, the big box stores like Walmart and that kind of crap and buy a $10 multi-tool. The reason for that is I know I'm eventually going to lose the stupid thing or break it. One of my buddies is going to borrow it, and I'm far, far less cheesed off if I screw up a $10 multi-tool than my $100 Leatherman or Gerber. Yeah, they're great to have. They're fantastic tools. They're really good name-brand multi-tools are fantastic tools, much better quality. But at the same time, I'm even going to destroy one of those in a couple of years. You know, I don't think I've ever had one for more than 2 years before. I either destroyed it accidentally, you know, just weird circumstances, falls in your pockets, driven over by a car, goes in the river, you know, something like that. I lose them more than I break them. But at that point, you've got pliers, you've got a you know, some sort of little saw quite often, a screwdriver kind of thing. So you're not trying to use a knife blade as a screwdriver. Because you can do it. The problem is, it's not designed for that. You've got a good chance of breaking the knife blade if you're using it for a screwdriver, or stabbing yourself, or something stupid like that, or damaging whatever you're trying to unscrew. You know, you're trying to fix your glasses and end up, you know, breaking the lens in your glasses. Not so good. That wasn't quite how to do that, was it? So, you know, it's really not a bad idea to pair a multi-tool and a knife together. I would say, you know, if you're going to if you're going to buy stuff for holidays, if you want to spend $20 on somebody and give them a really effective kit, a $10 multi-tool, a couple dollar cheap knife, one of those little LED flashlights, preferably one like on a key ring or something so it's easy to find, hard to lose, and some sort of a holder for their belt or purse or what have you as a way to carry this stuff. And if it's got a cell phone holder, even better. I've seen a couple relatively inexpensive nylon gadget holsters is what they call them, that you can have all this stuff in, readily accessible, out of the way, doesn't get damaged. It protects your phone, it protects your little flashlight, your lighter, all your stuff pretty well. It doesn't usually take the multi-tool. The multi-tool often is in its own case next to it, so you got two things in your belt. Not that hard to put on, not that hard to take off. You go into the courthouse to pay taxes or traffic fine or something like that. You got to take all this stuff off and leave it in your car anyway. So it's easier to take one thing or two things off than it is 24 things, because you look like Batman when you start getting that kind of stuff on your belt anyway. So that's kind of an issue. Okay, let's see. Looks like we're coming up toward the end of the show. We got about 2 minutes left. I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Hopefully you learned something. Maybe you got to laugh at me ranting and raving and, screaming into a microphone on the internet and all that kind of stuff. You can hear us anytime on the Rangers Mirror, which is at rangers.com. Or you can tune in on Tuesday nights at 8 before the Uncle Dak Show on Osprey Radio Networks, which is OspreyNet.info, I believe. Osprey carries us at 8, and Rant Radio carries us at 9 p.m. Eastern, will vary with your time area, on Saturday nights, which is right in the middle of the night, kind of prime time. I want to thank Sim for letting me have that spot. That's pretty cool. You can find a whole lot more Ranger videos and stuff up on YouTube. Just search for R4NGER5 for Rangers Tube. And see V get a haircut, all kinds of things like fire starting videos, radio videos, all that kind of stuff. The whole series Back and Beyond, Storm the Wire, a whole bunch of other stuff like that up too. So, get a chance to check those out. Hopefully you can learn something. Hopefully you can find something you can use. I'm going to go out of here with some really nice, hard, aggressive industrial. This band used to be known as Auschwitz 46. They changed their name around 94, 95 to Terminal 93. The two tracks I'm going to do are... The first track is the theme to Three's Company, and it's not like any version you've ever heard before. And the second track is Terminal 93, which is what they're named for now. I don't know if they're still active. I haven't crossed paths with these guys in quite a while, so I hope it's still okay to use their stuff. Thank you very much for letting me use the stuff 10 years ago, and I finally got around to doing it, finally found it again. And so I've been Iron Angel. I'm out of here. Hope you enjoy it. Talk to you next time.
weaknesses of all humans and to say, yes, I accept you. I even love you because you're part of me. You're an extension of me.
Now!